right, hello and welcome to the Cosmic Eyes Show. It is 2020 now. That's an interesting year. The year of clear vision. The year of perfect vision, they're saying. Hence the 2020, I guess.
Has something to do with cosmic eye as well, right?
I think so. That one cosmic eye has the perfect 20 vision since it's
20 vision.
Since it's not 2020, it's 20 vision when you only have one cosmic eye. So I being a wearer of glasses, you know, 2020 to me is some mythical state of being, but you know, that clear vision may unfold in this new year. We'll see. So happy new year to everyone. Thank you for supporting us. You are listening to the Cosmic Eye Show. I am your host, Jason Napolitano. And over there in Los Angeles, we have Mr. Chris Sheridan. How is your new year going so far, by the way? We are a few days into it.
It's going well. It really feels like a new year. And I'm glad we did the new year's show because I think it was one that I needed to hear as much as... you know, talk about, because it's, you know, it is that time for, you know, clearing the space for the new to come
absolutely.
In. I think that was my takeaway from that podcast. And I think it worked. I did a spring cleaning on January 1st and, you know, it was warm enough to open the windows and I just, you know, cleared my desk off and put papers away and dug through things. And,
that's great.
Before I actually added something new, I prepared the playing field, I guess.
Cleared
the room for something to happen. So
you return to that state of zero that we talked about in that podcast that we reference a lot. Return to zero.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and that's really kind of the whole idea of it. I mean, the birth of the sun is, you know, this full circular motion of things, right? You know, it's a birth and it's a rebirth at the same time. You know, there's a whole cycle of creation and you know, death and resurrection and so on. And, you know, we're finding ourselves at that new point of new birth at this time of the year and, you know, creating new things in our lives. And I think it's important to remember that. You know, even in the, you know, popular sort of mindset these days that isn't so oriented towards spirituality, we still have the good sense to make our New Year's resolutions now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We do see that something quote unquote new is here. And we try to take advantage of that energetically speaking. So even if we don't know exactly why, we still do participate in that, you know, with that, you know, that kind of thing we do each year when we take stock of our lives and look at some of the things that are working and some things that aren't working and so on. You know, and try to create a new way of doing things that's better, more evolved, right? More spiritually oriented, perhaps.
Well, it's more conscious.
Instead
of just reverting to business as usual, because even, you know, if you add these new resolutions in, if there isn't enough space or there's fertile ground for them to take, the tendency that is then to revert back, then it becomes the same old story instead of really a new year. So with an open mind, with a consciousness, a new way of looking, and I guess with this year 2020, clearer vision,
right.
Spiritual vision,
no,
spiritual
exactly.
insight into ourselves and the world around us and what our relationship is.
Yeah, exactly. And don't be a backslider. I like that old Christian term, backsliding. You make some headway, you know, and then, you know, into getting away from sin and you backslide. So don't backslide this year. Let's keep moving forward. Let's keep moving forward. All right. So interestingly enough, we are doing a show on tarot today, on the tarot cards. It's going to be an overview. We've done a couple of episodes and pleased as to which episodes. Chris was kind enough to actually log in all the episodes and put those together with a little overview of each one and the numbers and so on. So I'm going to post that on the website soon. There's going to be links. I have been a bit remiss on the website, so that'll be on cosmiceye.org. So any of the episodes that we reference in the future, you'll be able to easily find and look at the topics and titles and so on, and you'll be able to click on those if you want to go back and listen to any of them. So what were those the numbers of those ones with the tarot cards that we did before?
Episode 40 and 51. 40 was the zero card, the fool, and then 51 was the magician.
That's right. All right. Cool.
The one card.
Yeah. So we're going to do, we're going to go through and do the rest of the 22 trumps, the major arcana, as time goes on. But we thought, we talked about this a few weeks ago when we were kind of outlining the shows we were going to do. We thought, hey, let's go kind of go back retro a little bit and kind of overview the tarot as a system of philosophy, of spirituality, of thinking, you know, the symbolism and so on, the construction and history of it, and how it can be used. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today. So this show is about the tarot in general. As we said, then there's going to be specific shows on different different cards as well as time goes on. So we drew from several different sources. I mean, I've been studying tarot, obviously, for many, many years. It's not obvious until I tell you, I guess, but it's like, oh, you can feel by listening to my voice how many years I've studied the tarot. Anyway, I've studied the tarot many years, as you have as well, Chris. And you actually did speak about that you used to do readings and stuff when you were in the band and stuff back in the 80s. So
I did. But you're definitely the scholar and the expert of the cards and the symbols.
You're the I Ching dude. And one of these days we're going to need to talk about I Ching. Ah. You did a beautiful class on that was fantastic. And hopefully,
Chinese New Year's coming up. Maybe we can time it.
Oh, great idea.
With the lunar, with the rat.
Fantastic idea. So I drew a bit from, just to kind of reference and reinforce some of the stuff over the years. One of my main sources is the BOTA, and that is Paul Foster Case's organization that he started. It stands for Builders of the Aditum, and Aditum is sort of a secret temple or a temple within. So it's kind of an interesting word, BOTA, .org. You can find their information. But one of his most famous books and is one of his best-selling books is just called The Tarot, A Key to the Wisdom of the Ages. And that's a beautiful book to have. I highly recommend it. Paul Foster Case. If you're into tarot and you have not read Paul Foster Case, you are missing one of the great luminaries in that field. Probably, for my money, the greatest tarot scholar ever. Him and probably Aleister Crowley. Manly Hall's work is excellent. He goes on a different direction with it. His historical stuff and his mythological and sort of folkloric stuff is fantastic. And there's some great work in the Secret Teachings. He has a chapter on tarot, and there's a beautiful poster in there which shows the fool and his journey through the different stages and so on. You can kind of see that's one of the meanings of those tarot cards through that visual representation. You'll know what I mean when you see it. So, you know, if you don't have the Secret Teachings of All Ages, you can look that up. What is the title of that? Do you know what the title of that poster is? Is it just called The Fool or The Tarot, Manly Hall? How do you think they would Google that if they wanted to see that actual poster? You know, the one that they did from the plate that's in the book?
Yeah, it's, well, in the book, it's titled A Layout of Major Tarot Trumps.
Okay, so that's how it would probably be. If you look that up and then look, Secret Teachings, A Layout of Major Tarot Trumps, I'm imagining it will come up. I don't have my computer.
And it's the full card, huge.
It's big.
And then within it are the rest of the cards kind of embedded in the picture, like in a pyramid, kind of overlaying the central, you know, main card.
Yeah.
Which is interesting that you know, in that one somehow is the ground or the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
To hold the rest of them, of the major
arcana. Yeah, well, we talked about that a bit in the full podcast that we did, the zero card. So here's the thing, we've got to get into a structure a little bit. So we talk about the tarot, we're talking about structure, we're talking about order, we're talking about an underlying philosophical sort of a construction or basis for the philosophy of tarot, for the actual understanding of its sort of spiritual wisdom contained within the symbolism. But primary to it is the structure of it. So the thing that's challenging for people when they start out is that you hear, you know, hundreds of different attributions to the cards and, you know, 50 or 60 different attributions to how they're laid out and numbered and whether or not they're, you know, attributed to this or that astrological sign or alchemical attribution or Hebrew letter and all of that. And so it becomes a bit confusing. Oh, there he is. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year from the dogs.
From the dogs and to the dogs, we wish you all a Happy New Year.
And there is a dog on the full card.
There is a dog in the full card, and he's barking away and letting that fool know that he's there. So speaking of that, he's either instinct or the subconscious mind in some versions of symbolism, or he's the conscious mind. He's warning the fool that he's about to go off a precipice into the abyss below, or the fool is just standing there, and we don't know exactly what he's doing, but the dog is by his side as a companion, instinctually speaking. So that's a little bit of that. So the dog's presence is going to fuel a little bit of that. So anyway, getting back to the structure of things, you will see, like I said, many different attributions to many different things, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go. This has a bit to do. Not a bit to do. It has everything to do with the trajectory and history of the tarot cards, which are murky and all equally disputed. So we'll get into a little bit right now, just some very basic historical understandings. First of all, there is no one academically accepted sort of historical trajectory of where these cards came from or how they came into being. There is not a single one accepted. There is some evidence of cards that go back to the late 1300s, early 1400s in Italy, and I think France, Provence. There is some ideas that possibly a sect called the Albigenses, who are a sort of proto-Gnostic set that existed, which existed in the 12th century. I think early 13th century and was crushed by the Catholic Church at a certain point, had something to do with the tarot. That's a couple of authors think that, A.E. Waite being one of them. Manly Hall talks about that a little bit in Secret Teachings. That's one idea. One idea is that they go back all the way to ancient Egypt, and that the tarot cards themselves were actually individual images, which might have been in an initiatory space and were used as sort of stations in some kind of initiatory ritual. And that's how the cards are often used in modern day magical orders, as a sort of a symbolic representation of that grade that you're seeking admission into, which is interesting. That's something you can find more information about if you look up the Golden Dawn or the OTO or any of these sort of Western mystery traditions that came out of England and Germany and France in the 19th century, and then are still alive and well today. So the Egyptian hypothesis is floating around out there. The Book of Thoth is what the tarot is known as to some individuals. Eliphas Levi, the great magician who wrote Transcendental Magic, that's how it was translated into English, he is one of the most prolific and important writers in early modern magical history, for sure, sort of promulgated that view. And some of the early scholars, Cord de Gebelin and Papou, Gerard Ancus, I think, or Ancus was his name, I believe, his real name. So a lot of the French occultists held on to that. They were, of course, enamored with the idea of ancient Egypt at that time, because this is the time of Napoleon, and they actually, were bringing back artifacts from Egypt. Napoleon had conquered Egypt. Champollion had, or was going to at this time, the late 1800s, when the Rosetta Stone was found, and actually the hieroglyphs were comprehended and transliterated, because they had those Greek and those Greek equivalents, and they knew the hieroglyphs and so on from that, and then they kind of built backwards from that. So that's one of the theories. There's an idea that that the tarot goes back to India, possibly China. So, Crowley was also enamored with that theory, and he built a lot of I Ching and Chinese Taoist sort of symbolism into his deck, that beautiful Thoth deck that he did. That's a fantastic deck. If you get a chance, check that out. It's, you know, again, that's got its own set of attributions and so on. He follows the basic schema of the Golden Dawn, which is the one we'll talk about. It's the BOTA one as well. And what I mean, the schema I mean is the attributions of the Hebrew letters, the astrological signs, and so on that go with each of the 22 major arcana. The last thing, and then we'll get into structure a little bit, the last little bit of historical stuff, and I don't know if you've heard this story, but this is kind of a fun one. Paul Foster Case, in the beginning of the tarot, talks about how there was a meeting of all these initiates from all over the world at Fez, Morocco. And they got together because they felt that the ancient wisdom was under threat, basically, by Christianity and by materialism and scientism and so on. At some point in a fairly recent history, I think his idea was that this probably took place in 1300s, 1400s, 1500s, something like that. I don't think he specifies, as I recall. But they met there, and they all spoke different languages, and then they devised this sort of symbolic representation of their philosophy via this picture book of symbols, of 78 different symbols, which became the tarot. That was his idea. And he said maybe it was a Chinese initiate who came up with that idea, because they had the saying that, you know, a picture is worth 1,000 words in China, and plus, in, you know, a Chinese character actually is a pictogram. It's not really a word. It symbolizes an idea. I mean, they do have letters now for modern words, but most of their symbols are hieroglyphics. They mean something. They mean a noun or a verb or a state of being or something like this, right? And, you know, you know more about that than I do with the I Ching stuff, and we'll get into more of that when we go into I Ching. But the point is that they devised this sort of book, this loose leaf book of all these symbolic ideas, so that they could communicate with each other, and they could keep a sort of mnemonic or memory device that they could use to keep this ancient wisdom alive. And then there's the idea that the Roma people, you know, more popularly known as the gypsies, then took up these cards and were doing divinations, and the cards then turned into normal playing cards. So they were like hidden in plain sight, as it were. They were hidden in plain sight. And there, you know, there's a lot of, you know, possible truth to a lot to these different theories. They may be all right. None of them may be right, but there was certainly persecution from the church at the time when these tarot cards were floating around in the 1400s, 1500s, and 1600s, when we have actual decks from that time. They've changed structure over the years. They started out much different, in a much different form. The earliest decks have all trumps, and there were different numbers of them, 56 in some cases, 58, whatever, you know. The modern version we have is probably from the late 1700s or early 1800s, where there's 78 cards. There's 22 major arcana, and those are the cards we're all most familiar with: the Fool, the Magician, the High Priestess, et cetera, going down the line. And then the minor arcana are the numbered cards with the four suits, which you talked about a little bit before. Those are the, you know, the suits and the modern playing cards. If, you know, in the tarot, they're the original attributions of wands, cups, swords, and pentacles. Wands, cups, swords, and pentacles, which became the modern playing cards, the diamonds, spades, blah, 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 etc. So that's a basic sort of historical outline. I mean, I'm going through that very quickly, but if you spend, you know, this is a rabbit hole. If you go down it, it becomes endlessly fascinating, but also an endless puzzle, because you'll never get to the truth of it, I don't think, unless they come up with some kind of definitive piece of evidence at some point, which is doubtful. The real issue, though, is what, you know, is the importance of the tarot, what it's for, and things like that, and we'll get into that in a moment. So the structure, as I said, it's 78 cards. It's built on that foundation of 78. 22 major arcana, the 56 minor arcana. So the 50, as I said, the 22 are the picture cards. In the AE Weight version, the minor arcana do have pictures that go along with them, but that's a really modern addition. The oldest decks have have just the symbols of the numbers in that and the particular suit with them. So E.E. Wade, Pamela Coleman Smith, who was the artist who put those together, added those attributions, those symbols, which they're nice. Those are great cards. E.E. Wade's deck is a great deck for doing divination. Not the best deck maybe for doing magical work or meditation work, but definitely a great deck for divination. And so forth. So the deck, essentially, I mean, it's you know, we'll only be able to touch on some really basic things. It's complicated, but it's also fairly simple. Essentially, when you look at it Kabbalistically, it breaks down into four levels. So each of the, in the minor arcana, each of the attributions, each of the designations for those, where you have the wands, the cups, the swords, and the pentacles, is attributed to a letter of the divine name of God, which is Yod-Heh-Vov-Heh. That in turn works with the four worlds of Kabbalah. And so you have basically the attributions of all those cards sort of designating the manifestation of materiality, in essence, if that makes sense. So essentially the idea is that, you know, the world becomes gradually denser and denser as it materializes. So, you know, again, there's these four worlds or planes where that's occurring, and it's, you know, this is an arbitrary designation, but there's four of them. So the wands correspond to the archetypal world or the element of fire, which is the Yod and the Yod-Heh-Vov-Heh. The cups correspond to the creative world, the element of water, and that's the first He and Yod-Heh-Vov-Heh. The swords correspond to the formative world, to the element of air, and to the Vav in Yod-Heh-Vov-Heh. And the coins, the final He, correspond to the material world or the element of earth, the second He in Yod-Heh-Vov-Heh. So that's sort of a shorthand symbolic way of looking at the manifestation of life and creation into materiality. And then the cards, what's interesting about that is that theme reoccurs in the construction of the minor arcana. So the king, which is fire, would be Yod. The queen is water, and that would be Hay. And then the knight or the prince is air. And that would be, of course, the Vav. And then the final He is the page or the princess. And that is the earth factor, or the final He of that and in that schema. So there's a lot of these ideas occurring and reoccurring within the cards themselves and within the construction of the deck. So I'm not going to go on and on with that stuff. There's a million things you can read on that. Yeah. I just wanted to touch on that. Do you have anything to add to that?
Just as far as the number of the cards, mm-hmm. and so the 22 major arcana with the pictures, I'll come back to that. The 56 are four suits, if you want to call them that, like the suits in everyday playing cards. Mm-hmm. And there are 14 of each, whereas and that comes with, you know, the number 56, where we have 52 cards in our four suit everyday playing deck, but there's only 13 different ones, you know, ace through king.
Well, they dropped out the knight, so the knights are gone.
Right. Yeah. So, and then the page is like the jack.
Exactly.
The playing card. So, you know, very, very similar. It just, there's one extra card per suit. And I know it's not 100%, oh, cups mean hearts and swords mean spades. Although there is a correspondence, it helps me just as a shorthand because I, you know, playing cards are so common, I guess, it kind of helps me connect you know, the everyday and then the mystical. But the point, just to finish, I wanted to make about the 22 and why that number might be significant, because you're talking about the Kabbalistic aspect to the cards as well. And the 22 number comes up a lot, in ancient symbolism. Where I've seen that the most is depicted as a triangle inside a seven-pointed star, which is inside a 12-pointed star. And if you add those numbers together, 3, 7, and 12, you get 22.
Yeah.
3 being the any kind of trinity you might have, whether it's Hindu or Christian or morning, noon, and night, beginning, middle, and end. I mean, it goes way beyond any tradition. It is such a, in the morning, the afternoon, and the evening, it's just a very, very rich symbolic number. And then the 7, you get the 7 days of the week, or the 7, which also correspond to the 7 planetary rings in the old system.
Yeah.
And then 12, you get the outer ring that's beyond the 7 planets, which is the zodiac band that goes around the pole. Shebang.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a technical term, shebang, actually. I think it might be Yiddish. I don't know.
That's a Yiddish Kabbalistic term, isn't it? But you're right about that. That's a fantastic way of looking at that. And that's interesting, because the 22 Hebrew letters that they work with and assign to these cards actually break down that same way. So in Hebrew, there's 3 what are known as the mother letters. There's 7 double letters, and then there's 12 simple letters, and those correspond to the same sorts of values, and they break them down like that. So that's an interesting correlation between those two things. But it all comes from this Kabbalistic base. I mean, most of our Western mystery tradition does build itself off of this Hebrew wisdom, this hidden Hebrew wisdom. And, the basis of it does essentially comes from the mysterious book called the Sefer Yetzirah, book formation, or the Zohar, a mystical commentary on the Bible, basically. So those two sources sort of form the basis of what we know as modern Kabbalah. And of course, originally it was an oral tradition. Wasn't really written down until about the 12th century, most likely, but it's much, much older than that. It goes way back. And the tradition is that, it goes back to Moses, goes back to the angels, goes back to Adam, and so on. That's the sort of mythological symbolic attributions of where it comes from. But the modern stuff that we know of, it comes out of Central Europe, France, the Middle East, Safed, where, in Israel, and these ideas come from maybe the 11th, 12th century, something like that. The modern versions of them, when they began to write these things down, and people believe that these things were dispersed when a lot of the Sephardic Jews were thrown out of Spain. And they ended up going to Provence and different parts of Europe, and you can kind of see that trajectory, because where these things pop up are places like Prague and Provence and in Italy. They're all places where the diaspora of Jews from Spain, when they were expelled from Spain, I think it was in 1492, if I'm not mistaken. It was around the same time Columbus was discovering America, I believe. Discovering, I put quotes around that for anyone who...
it was already there.
Odds with that, because I do, but I'm just using...
He discovered it for himself. Personal discovery.
Let's say that. He discovered it. And he didn't even really discover that. He discovered, actually, the Caribbean. So, at any rate, the point is that a lot of this stuff does come up around that time. So, this is antecedent to when these cards were born and so on, and there's a lot of the symbolism. Whether or not that actual one-to-one attribution of the 22 Hebrew letters with the 22 major arcana exists or was intended, it is remarkably useful. Let's just say that. And so most scholars they'll either dismiss it, or they'll say, that it's probably not, wasn't probably originally intended, but it's remarkably useful and similar, in its connection and symbolic value. So you can, you know, you can get a lot out of understanding the some of the symbolism behind those Hebrew letters that are on the cards, if you have a set of cards that have those, and so on. All right, so we discussed a bit about construction. Prior to that, we discussed a little bit about history. Let us talk a little bit about the useful nature of these cards, and the value of them. By doing that, then we have to look at what we think these cards are used for. So here are some of the different ideas. Some people believe they are to be used for divination. Some people believe they are a picture book of ancient symbolic ideas. Some people believe they are representations of archetypal energies that exist within us. Some people believe they are stages of initiation. Some people believe they are stages of creation in the cosmos and the universe, and lessons and principles of the universe and cosmos. That was more or less Aleister Crowley's idea. And there are other and, you know, more advanced and less advanced ideas about what these cards are used for. My take on this, and I'm sure yours is the same, is they are good for all of those things and even more. And they are, you know, and they are valuable for all of those reasons because they are symbolic pictures, because they're symbolic images, they're open to multiple interpretations. So all of those, you know, uses for them are valid and even more. One of the ways that I like to use them is for meditation. Not a lot of people use them for that. So you can use those symbolic images as a point of reference to meditate on, almost like a mandala, and they each have a specific purpose, which I'm writing a book right now on, and not to plug my own stuff, but I'm writing a book on that right now, and that's going to be, I'll keep you posted on that. But, you know, using these cards for that is a really valuable tool, and you'll kind of get an intuitive sense of what each card is for. And of course, the cards will mean different things to different people, but they do have some kind of inherent archetypal powers within them that open up certain parts of ourselves when we do sort of meditate on them. That's one thing. Divination, obviously, you use the cards for that. Tell me a little bit about your experiences with the cards and what you use them for, and when you find them to be valuable.
Well, like any other divination, like you mentioned, the I Ching, that I'm probably better versed with than I am the tarot. It's for me, it's a way of asking a question and getting, and I will say in quotes, answer. It's a possible answer, or it's a look into, maybe a deeper look into whatever the issue is. And for me, and if people I've worked with using, you know, both tarot and I Ching, is the formulation of the question. If you're asking the oracle, if you're asking the cards or the bones or whatever, the tea leaves, something, you know, you're, there's an issue. There's a question maybe you have, or just a problem or a general sense of, you know, why do I feel so uncomfortable these last couple of days? You know, what's going on? That's kind of the question. What's going on?
Yeah.
What's up with this? Whatever the issue is, if it's relationship or finance, health, you know, things like that. And this, it's like a microscope or a telescope. It gives a different point of view. And because in the I Ching, the coins are thrown, or in the tarot, the deck cards are shuffled. Mm-hmm. And then they're pulled out, and maybe the deck is cut, and, you know, and then these cards are pulled out seemingly randomly. Mm-hmm. That's a very important part of that, the way the tea leaves or the bones fall.
Sure.
It's, you're not really stacking the deck. You're not cherry picking, you know, your favorite cards. And, fortune, I win. You know, it's, they're kind of, that part of it is not you, not your conscious self. So when the answer comes, you know it's not really coming from you. And most of the times, it will give something, it will present an idea that maybe you hadn't thought of before, or it will help you look at your situation in a way that you weren't looking at it.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
And that is so valuable. And it doesn't have to be the answer, like the end all, but it helps you understand the question better, peers deeper into the subject.
Sure.
And I find that alone can, because a lot of times when you get to the point to where, geez, I better consult the cards. Mm-hmm. You've probably already tried to figure it out using your regular consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, thinking, I mean, some people,
you're using thinking mind and you've gotten only so far with the idea, right?
Exactly. And your friends are only so much help with their opinions. So you go to the cards, and since it's a random selection, you know, that part of it is kind of left to the spirits, I guess.
Yeah.
Or chance. And so, you know, you're not controlling it and you're getting something that maybe you didn't get before. And that's just a view onto what you're looking at.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it. You know, and then also I think what it does is, just getting back to that sort of rational mind thing or the thinking, it gets you out of thinking, it gets you out of rational mind into a sort of a non-rational way of looking at things, symbolic and archetypal way of looking at things that might free up, you know, some of the energy that's stuck on trying to figure it out, quote unquote. You know, oftentimes the best information comes through hunches or intuitions or just a feeling or a dream image or a fantasy. And that's what these cards really help to create in the mind. They are those things, you know, they're a placeholder for that. So you look at this symbol and it corresponds to something within that's archetypal, some sort of energy or instinct or feeling or something that's non-rational, non-verbal. And it kind of epitomizes that. And there's a sort of feeling quality that goes along with the cards that might help you to decide something in a bit of a different way, you know, more of a gut or a heart oriented kind of a decision that you can make, you know.
And sure, the literal versus the symbolic.
Yeah.
A lot of times when we're trying to figure something out, at least in the West, we say, well, let me write down the pros and cons of it. Well, what are the advantages? Well, sure. What are the risks involved? Am I willing to? And that's very great. That's really important to do. And sometimes that can be all you need. And you can't be too mushy and ethereal when it comes to brass tacks and getting things done.
Sure, sure.
But it can also be very limiting.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a way of, like a Rorschach blot, an ink blot might be. It's totally abstract.
Yeah.
But it gets you, I'm looking, you know, you might look at it and see something different the next day.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a timeliness too. It's when you shuffle the cards and when you're asking the question and when you're approaching, you know, the spread or the three card draw and looking at them. It's where you are in that moment now looking at it.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a kind of a timeliness.
They're very dynamic, aren't they? You've got to be in the moment with them. It's like, and this is why I think, you know, that it's valuable to have an understanding of the meanings, quote unquote, of the cards, according to, you know, some of these expert opinions and history and tradition and so on. But it's also more important to be flexible and let your own mind play with those images and come up with the ideas and associations that you have with that card as you get better and more in tune with your own unconscious, right?
Yes, and that's actually how it sounds like the process by which I learned the cards. You know, looked at them and, you know, read through as much of the book as I could, mm-hmm. at least the first 22, and got some sort of a sense, then just started using them.
Yeah.
And for a while I would look up every card and, oh no, this means this, oh, it's reversed, so it's got to mean that. And
yeah.
It took forever. And then I just kind of put the book down and went with how it felt. But as, you know, time goes on and you learn and grow more, I'm seeing symbols now that I didn't see in the card. Or I have an understanding of some of the symbols,
mm-hmm. yeah,
from exactly. other sources outside of tarot, just in astrology or, you know, symbolism or ancient
exactly.
wisdom. And I say, oh my gosh, well, there they are in the tarot card. And it's like, maybe I saw them before, but they mean something different to me now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a, yes, throw the book away and just let the pictures do the talking. And sometimes you really want to pick it up and go deeper and say, well, geez, well, you know, what does it mean when there's a human, an eagle, a bull, and a lion together on these four showing up again, you know, and then
exactly.
you know, you find out that it's, you know, the cardinal,
astrological signs.
Yeah.
It's the four elements. It's, you know, it's the yod, hey, vav, hey that we were talking about. It's many fold, you know, of those fourfold symbolisms, right?
Sure. So, yeah, I would, you know, just as a suggestion, you know, learn a little bit if you're starting out.
Yeah, it's valuable, you know, valuable
because there's
memorize.
A reason for them.
It is valuable to memorize some meaning. Stick with what I think, and you know, is to pick one system, you know, Waite's book or Paul Foster Case's book, or, you know, any of these new basic guides to tarot or so, you know, whatever. Pick one and kind of go with it and then start amplifying it as you go on. Do memorize things. It's very helpful in the beginning when you're doing readings to have those memorizations if nothing's really coming to you, you know, in terms of a feeling sense or images or intuitions from that card, that it can be good to have some of those stock sort of meanings to go to, and then you can kind of amplify them as you talk to the person or you work with your own, you know, your own self if you're doing that. So that's, you know, that's one way to work on it. One thing I like to do a lot is, you know, I'll take the deck and, you know, shuffle it a certain number of times or whatever. I like, you know, seven's a good number, you know, however you do it. I mean, there's no, you know, sort of stone, you know, set in stone way of doing it, but, you know, you can do it seven times three or something, or however you want to do it, and then cut the deck. And then maybe as you're thinking that, you know, formulate a question like, and something open-ended, like, what do I need to understand that I may not understand about this situation? Or what do I need to know, you know, that's in my unconscious right now that I'm not aware of? You know, these kind of open-ended sort of questions, and do one card, just pull one card out and then meditate on that and think about your question and how it might relate to that symbol. That is a really useful, simple way of doing a, you know, a reading for yourself to kind of get in touch with the unconscious, because it is quote unquote random, but there is a sort of synchronous quality to it. And, you know, Marie-Louis von Franz, Jung's disciple, a genius, a great genius. I recommend her books and work highly. Wrote about that in when she wrote about synchronicity. She has a book on synchronicity and divination. That's fantastic. And I would highly recommend it. But you know, it's not completely random. There is a synchronous sort of a quality or synchronicity occurring when we're quote unquote randomly doing things, or we're doing a divination. Divination, by the way, is fortune telling. You know, it's trying to divine the future or to divine some sort of understanding, you know, in the present of something that's going to happen down the road. You know, I throw these words around a lot and then don't define them. I'm sorry about that. But so divination's simply the idea of fortune telling. So you know, there is a quality of the psychological quality that exists in doing that is very fresh and dynamic and helps you see things and make connections that you may not have made by doing something that seems random. Like you said, like throwing bones, or, you know, doing the I Ching, or, you know, pulling a tarot card, or, you know, doing an Ifa reading if you're in the Yoruba tradition. And the, you know, there's hundreds, probably thousands of types of divination out there.
And there's something to be said about the moment of when the cards are shuffled or coins are thrown. In a lot of Native American traditions, that's often how a child would be named. That moment it comes into this world. It's the first thing the mother sees, and it's Sitting Bull. There's a cow outside the teepee, and it's sitting. I don't know, or it's, you know, Lone Eagle, or it's, you know, it has something to do. What was happening in the world at that moment? Yeah. It could have been a million things in the randomness, but there was, that's the moment that baby was born, and that's where the you know, the hawk was perched on the fence post or something, and. Or at that very moment, Saturn was conjunct Pluto, and, you know, you have, I don't know astrology to talk about it like that, but there's something at that moment of your birth, you know, the time and the place, there was, you know, this randomness sort of that's always moving, you know, and it's just, okay, where do you stop the spinning wheel? You know, what does it land on? There's power in that.
Yeah. And the idea of that there's, you know, sort of the idea of synchronicity is attaching some meaning to those seemingly random or sort of serendipitous things that happen, you know, is trying to find the meaning and understanding with them. And that's very dynamic and in the moment and grounded in reality, while at the same time recognizing that there's something mysterious in it as well. And I think that's what the cards the tarot cards tap into that sort of part of ourselves that's, you know, it's this is beyond, rationality and timelines and what's possible and not possible in the material world according to science and things like that. And it reaches into the timeless, the eternal, the creative, the unconscious, the collective unconscious, the symbolic, the mythological, the magical. Those are different realms, different ways of experiencing life. And, you know, we're fond of talking a lot about the difference between science and spirituality. And, you know, oftentimes we come out against scientism, not science, scientism, the idea that there's some fixed truth in science, because that's not true. That's not scientifically accurate. Science is a method of investigation. It's not a collection of facts. And spirituality is designed for a completely different realm of experience. And spirituality, religion, magic, ritual, etc. They're designed for a completely different way of knowing. And it's equally valid. That's the thing we have to remember. It's equally valid. One is not better than the other one. They're both valuable in our human experience. You know, there's the multiverse of experiences going on within and without us at any given time, right? And so the cards are kind of where, and these symbolic images on these cards are kind of where those two worlds meet. You know, the science, I guess, comes in a sense of, you know, like science and spirituality. Science comes in the structure of the tarot, the fact that, the numbers and these really concrete things that you can kind of grab onto, and these pictures on these particular cards themselves, and there's a material thing there. And then the spirituality is the interpretation, the subjective experience, the mystical side of it, and so on, right?
Well, it's true. And the same person could ask the same question and get the same cards with a different reader.
Yeah.
And have completely different, or maybe very much different anyway, responses or interpretations of it that could both be right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So there is, it's a really interesting mix between, this was very purposefully put on this card in this way, and it has very specific meanings. And then also, what does it feel like? Also in relation to each other, if you do a three card spread, maybe, what's, the history of this issue.
By three card spread, are you thinking about the past, present, future type thing? One of those.
Absolutely, yeah. Kind of... This is like, this is the conditions under which the situation arose. This is kind of where you are now in relation to the problem. And
this is where it's going.
This is the future. Well, you can't just skip to the third card. The third card is influenced by the other two.
Yeah.
And if you change the way you look at your situation in the present moment, you're automatically going to change the future. And I would even say that even by putting those three cards out that weren't there before, now you see a beginning, middle, and end, or a past, present, future view on your problem. And that in itself has changed the experiment. So if you were to do a reading afterwards, it might be a different reading, because by the very fact of having that previous one, you've now looked at your situation in a different way. So your consciousness is different. Like you can't
absolutely
step twice into the same river.
Well, it gets into the interesting idea of particle physics, where our viewing, our subjective viewing of the experience actually colors the outcome of the experiment itself. Something like that. You know, you think, okay, well, is my divination actually, helping the outcome of this situation in some way? Is it coloring the outcome of it in some way because I did a divination?
Excuse me. Well, it's like any, like a journey. You're driving somewhere.
And, yeah.
Well, if you get off track or something, and then you look at the map and say, well, geez, if I just keep going where I'm going, I'm never going to get to where I want to be. Well, that may be true, but you also have the opportunity to change your direction.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And use this, this GPS of the cards to say, wait a minute, this is where I am, and this is how I got here. And if I, keep going in this direction, this is where I'll wind up. But if I can look at this differently, if I can look at myself differently in relation to this situation, clearly you're going to have a different outcome.
Absolutely.
It's not set in stone. Like,
no,
you know,
exactly. It's not like, oh, I'm going to, this is surely going to happen. It's fate because the cards told me so. It's, you know, that any good reader will say, you know, these are potential outcomes. You know, if you continue on this path of XYZ, this is what you're going to get most likely. You know, but then that implies then that there's a possibility of doing something different, of thinking something different, of creating a new way of being that, you know, that sort of thwarts that, say, negative, quote unquote, outcome or that fate, you know, and that's the free will part of it, right?
Yeah, and you're right. And it's very dynamic. It's very interactive.
Yeah.
It's not, oh, I have a problem. Oh, and here's the answer. Well, I guess I'm screwed. Or, oh, it's going to be great, depending on the cards. Well, we do that at the doctor. The doctor may come back with a diagnosis, and some people take the diagnosis and they die, you know, 6 months to the day when the doctor said they had 6 months to live.
Some people, 16 years later, because they changed
where they were going. Here's how you got to clogged arteryville: by eating this and not exercising. And if you keep on doing what you're doing, this is where you're going to wind up. Well, that also, you can roll over in your back and say, well, that's it. That's what the doctor said. You know, well, if you believe that, it might actually come true.
No, exactly.
Or you can believe something else and say, well, gosh, if this is where I'm headed and I don't want to go there, let's change what's happening now. Let's change what is in the present and how I'm going about things, how I'm looking at my health or my relationship or something. I did this as kind of an example of using the cards. I'm cheating a little now because I am using I actually use the I Ching, but the same thing, to use a divination method to approach a problem. And what I got from the I Ching was wood over mountain. And that may not mean anything, but you know, wood is, you know, like a tree, you know, penetration that goes in this soil. And mountain is something still that is very difficult to move, like an obstacle or things like that. That's what it means in the I Ching. And I was asking, you know, about, do I stay in a relationship? I was really on the fence about it.
Yeah.
And this was a number of years ago. And I got that and I go, well, that didn't really help me. And I walked outside the apartment and it's in the Hollywood Hills underneath the Hollywood Hills, and looking up, there's a very famous mid-century house, and there was a barren part of the hill that was just rock, and right in the middle of it was growing a tree coming right out. So, I mean, I physically, you know, synchronistically saw what was in the I Ching reading, and I knew right away what it meant. Stay where you are, the mountain, that's not going to move. Mm-hmm. But while you're there, the tree is still growing.
Interesting.
Yeah. So instead of stay or go, it was stay and grow.
And grow.
And that gave me, and I stayed in relationship at least another year, and I did grow, and I was glad I did, because that was very instrumental. You know, you'll find what any of these answers or potential answers mean, and really be open to it. And, you know, especially when you're at an impasse, if you really just can't decide something or can't get a handle on you know, what's going on, or, you know, what to do, it can be, you know, these decisions can be overwhelming. And so I have made decisions. I have, you know, listened to, because I wasn't able to come up with a definitive answer on my own.
Definitely. It can be a valuable way of making decisions when one is stuck and there seems to be no rational or logical solution presenting itself, right? So speaking of that, you know, that is, like I said, one of the main uses of it is this, you know, kind of understanding of one's own unconscious experiences, feelings within, dreams, etc. Probably one of the biggest uses of tarot is for that. And you can, you know, you don't even need to know how to do, you know, do any kind of fortune telling or divination, or even really know much about the cards. Just purchase a deck. Get a basic deck that you like. You know, that A.E. Waite deck is, you know, sometimes called the Universal Tarot or something. It's that, you know, the most common deck out there, and you can get a, you know, a copy of it for, I don't know, $15, $16 online. something like that, or even less. And, you know, A.U. Waite's book that goes along with it is a valuable, you know, kind of place to start and things like that. And just get that deck and start working with those images and not really even worry about so much the meaning of the cards, but just start kind of feeling out what these images evoke in you. Like, what do I feel like when I pick this card up and look at what is this making me think of? I associate this with my brother, or I associate this card with work. And, you know, it's telling you something about your feelings that you might not, you know, that might be somewhat unconscious, some might be in the shadow. It's a way to get shadow material up to consciousness to some degree. It's helpful in doing that. So that's one of the more valuable uses of tarot. I highly recommend it for that. And then the second one, of course, is the meditation. And then, you know, as you get comfortable with it, you know, you can do divination. And like I said, like, you can either do that 3-card spread Chris was talking about, which is really easy, you know, 1, 2, 3, put them down. You can see, you know, designate 1 past, 1 present, 1 future. It's easy to go from left to right, or use a 1-card pull and, you know, just kind of, you know, shuffle the cards and say, you know, kind of formulate a question for yourself. Like, what do I need to know about this situation that I'm not consciously aware of? Pull a card and meditate on it, and something will come to you. It's amazing. You know, have paper nearby to write some ideas down or whatever. That can be really helpful. But there's, you know, and we'll get more into this as we get into the individual cards. We're kind of coming to the end of the show, but those are some of the real basic uses. And this stuff can be valuable, especially at this time of year, you know, the beginning of the year, a new year, when you're trying to kind of figure out where you're at, where you want to go, changes you need or want to make, things that you might not be aware of that you want to kind of get rid of, a spring cleaning within, so to speak, and things like that. Do you have any final thoughts on tarot and how it might be used, or how, you know, it could be valuable for our listeners?
Well, yes. And this, I've probably used it this way as much as I have any other way. Mm-hmm. And that is when I don't know what to ask.
Interesting.
I maybe, you know, it's not a pressing issue. It's not a decision that I can't seem to, you know, come up with the right decision. Mm-hmm. It's what do I need to know right now?
So what would be valuable for me? Actually say, what do I need to know right now?
What do I need to look at in my life? Or what am I missing? Is there something I'm missing that it might be beneficial? Help me see that.
That's a different way of wording. That's kind of what I was getting at when I said, you know, what is something maybe that I'm missing in the unconscious? Something like that. Yeah, you could even, I mean, I think too, if you didn't even have any words or even any, you know, any sort of question at all, you could just shuffle the cards and pick a card and look at it and see what pops up without any verbalizing. That's a valuable thing too, don't you think?
Sure. And it may even conjure up the question.
I conjure the question. Exactly.
It's like, oh gosh, that's what I need to be looking
at. Yeah. That's a valuable tool too. Yeah, exactly. Let's say you did that and you came up with the Fool. I mean, you could have two meanings of the Fool there. You could be like, well, what am I being foolish about that I'm not recognizing? Or, you know, looking at it more esoterically and saying, okay, this, you know, this super consciousness that's within me, that's guiding me, that's this no thing behind everything. How is that playing itself out in my life? And how do I need to get more in contact with that? Those are kind of two things you might come up with a Fool. Or, you know, where am I being foolish in my life, in my business, in my relationships, et cetera. And, you know, start asking questions like that. So, you know, different stuff will come up depending on how you feel, according to that card, right?
Right. And sometimes, you know, it might even be, you know, when do I need to be foolish, more foolish? Am I being too left-brained? You need to let go a little bit and
be the holy fool,
be a little free-spirited, not so worried about, you know, the ground under my feet as I go. There's wisdom in nonsense.
Interesting. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I love that word, nonsense. You know, people think it has a negative connotation. It really is one of the more positive ways of looking at things. Nonsense, you know.
Sense. It's just not of the five senses. From a sixth sense or other sensory, you know, non-sensory. Yeah,
and non-rational. I like that look at it, you know, a non-rational way of knowing. You know, it's more intuitional, more heart-oriented, more, you know, feeling-oriented. You know, it's hard to put a label on where that stuff comes from or what it actually is, but we know it, you know, we have a sense of it. Sometimes it's in our gut, sometimes it's in our heart, sometimes it's a, a little fantasy or just a little twinge of a feeling or what have you. I mean, and that's, you know, there's wisdom in that stuff. And oftentimes I would say, you know, on the whole, women are better at, you know, getting at those kinds of things than men are, because men, we tend to be a lot more rational and a lot more thinking oriented. And, you know, the whole society of the, you know, the US and the Western world is very quote unquote rational and thinking oriented. And oftentimes we denigrate the other ways of knowing, the non-rational ways of knowing. And a way to get back in touch with this is by using something like tarot or I Ching or any of these other tools. Looking at great art is the same thing. Going down to an art gallery and just looking at a painting and seeing what it means to you, not what the history of the painting is and what this painter meant. And you know what I mean?
Oh, so, sure.
You can do it with music. You can do it with, you know, with sculpture. You can, I mean, there's a million ways that you can experience these things, but it helps to open us up to that non-rational way of knowing again. At any rate, we are getting to the end of the show. So like I said, we're going to do more on this subject on the individual cards as time goes on. So we'll keep you posted on that. And I actually will be coming out with my tarot meditation book, this year, this new year. So I will keep you posted on that and we'll do more on that. So thank you for joining us this week. I want to thank everybody who's been supporting us throughout the year. This is, probably our 54th or 55th episode here. You know, and so we've done like a full year of these. We talked about this, but it's kind of an exciting time for us because we're coming into a new year. We'd be expanding the show, and we're going to be doing some new things this year, and so on. So we need your help with that. So if you could please donate to us, if you can, at anchor.fm/cosmiceye, or, you know, hit us up at info.cosmiceye. That helps, and let us know, you know, how you could help, or, you know, how you know, what we can do for you if you want to
us. Yeah, let us know a show topic, right? Or,
different ideas, things you
go
want to
deeper into
about.
Something we've already talked about, or, yeah, you know, maybe something we haven't touched upon.
Absolutely. You know, we're open. We're here for you. We're trying to, you know, make this a participant sort of thing. We're greatly appreciative of the people that are supporting us on a monthly basis. Thank you guys so much. Hope you have a beautiful new year. And I think that is about it for this week. Yes, Chris? Anything else?
I think that's about it. I mean, like you said, we could go on for hours and hours on but I think we covered some of the basic aspects.
Right? Yeah. We'll go deeper
kind of
into
put a context on what the tarot is. And
overall. And what maybe some of the things they can use it for and what we use it for. So, thank you again for listening each week. I am the author of If You Can Worry, You Can Meditate. Chris is the author of The Spirit and the Sky, and those are both available on Amazon. Check us out at cosmiceye.org or chrissheridan.com. Have a great week and a blessed new year. We will be here next week. We put out a new episode each Monday. Thanks again. Goodbye, and God bless.